Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Yeah, I'm working on it here, Tommy. I got an issue with my headphones. I got it. There we go. 7:03 Saturday morning. Hardy here. Yes, I have a cold. But I'm here because it's Ryder Cup weekend. Boy, was I looking forward to this. Woo! Going to come in early on the Saturday of Ryder Cup weekend. Talk about some Ryder Cup. And the U.S. got out to a strong start in day one. It's beautiful, right? They take three out of the four opening matches in the morning matches in day one. And I'm thinking, well, this is going to be really fun. You know, you're going to... Europe is showing enough life to stay in this thing, but U.S. jumping out to the early lead, going to be able to watch some Ryder Cup on Saturday and Sunday, get up early, watch the golf, and then, you know, get on with whatever you got for the day, you know? Home Depot, Bed Bath & Beyond. May not have enough time to do all of it today, but, you know, you go get your apple picking done, you go maybe grab some pumpkins before the prices get jacked up October 1st, Cup Monday. Whatever you got to do. We got Pats all day on Sunday, but that's okay because this thing was going to be in the bag by the time I got to head down to Gillette Stadium on Sunday morning. As it turns out, as you know by now, Europe sweeps the afternoon matches in day one. They haven't done that in almost 30 years, sweeping a series of four matches. So how does the U.S. respond? Well, long story short, Tiger Woods and Patrick Reed sat in the afternoon matches in day one. And I have to keep saying day one, day two, because there's such a huge time difference. If you're just waking up, you know, they are, some of these matches are already done for today. At least one of the matches is already done for today. And they are finishing off the first matches of the day in the first series of them. So I'll keep referring to them as day one, day two. At the end of day one, the U.S. was down 5-3. After jumping out to the 3-1 lead, they lost all four afternoon matches. Tiger Woods and Patrick Reed sat in the afternoon. Phil Mickelson has not been able to do much of anything. It appears as though he is going to sit out all day today. Don't look for Phil out there. Phil and Bryson DeChambeau in the afternoon matches yesterday got absolutely embarrassed. They lost, I believe, six of the first eight holes. This thing was off to an historic run for the European side in terms of that DeChambeau and Mickelson match yesterday. So they got waxed early. They held on, won a couple of holes on the back to make it almost interesting, but not quite. So here's what we've seen today. Tiger Woods, Patrick Reed back out on the course, not doing it against Francesco Molinari and Tommy Fleetwood once again. Tiger, by the way, was not one of the three wins for the U.S. in the day one first series of matches. Not going to win again today. Molinari and Fleetwood are up three holes through 14 over Tiger Woods and Patrick Reed, so you can pretty much kiss that one goodbye. Paul Casey and Tyrrell Hatton have already beat Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler, the odd couple out there. Lurch and the diminutive Ricky Fowler. And I like both these guys. I'm big fans of both Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler, but they were not getting it done at all. Ricky Fowler, I saw early this morning, leaving putts to have and win holes short. I I don't understand. In match play, you can afford to be aggressive. It doesn't matter if you blow it past the hole when you're trying to have holes. When you're that's what makes match play so much fun. That's why when you're out on the course with your buddies, you tend to play match play. Forget about the score for today. If we're going to have a match, let's have a match. And if I need birdie or par to win or have a hole, I'm gonna make a run at the cup, and I don't care if it goes 6 feet past because I don't have to worry about making the comeback. If it's at least to have the hole, not the case for Ricky. He's cozying putts up there and trying to. I don't know what he was doing. Doesn't matter. That match is over. So Tyrrell Hatton and Paul Casey have defeated Ricky Fowler and Dustin Johnson. Sergio Garcia and Rory McIlroy have defeated Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka. So, as I said, the count now, and as you heard from Tim Cohen in the headlines there, 7-3 in favor of Europe. And now it looks like we have another one gone final. Is this what I'm seeing here? All right. It appears that Ricky Fowler and Tommy Fleetwood are out there congratulating each other. There's a lot going on. There's just a lot going on. So here's where we stand. The U.S. is probably not going to be able to pull this one out and at least even things up. 8-3 now is where we're at. 8-3. They're not going. The best they can hope for today is to get it back within a point or two. And since the U.S. won the last Ryder Cup in 2016. And more on that coming up in a little while with John Feinstein, who I talked to a couple of weeks ago about his book, The First Major. It's all about the Ryder Cup, and I thought it was good conversation to share again today, especially since the U.S. is getting their teeth kicked in over in France. This is not going to be nearly as much fun to talk about today as I thought. So instead, I thought we would revisit the interview with John Feinstein about his book about the 2016 Ryder Cup instead. We'll do that in a little while. But since the U.S. did win the Ryder Cup in 2016, they only need 14 points to retain the cup. Europe needs 14 and a half to get the cup back. You've got the advantage going in. Now, never mind the fact that the U.S. hasn't been able to win on European soil since 1993. And it is an every other year event, but due to the events of September 11th, 2001, the schedule got changed, so now we're on the even years. But back in 93, that was the last time the U.S. managed to win on European soil. And it's not going to happen again. It totally screwed up everybody's weekend. I thought we were going to be watching this. This isn't fun. Is it fun watching Ian Poulter, who hasn't been able to do much on the golf course in I almost said real tournaments. Pardon me. Nope. It's very important, this Ryder Cup. In other tournaments, as a singular golfer, Ian Poulter is out there for some reason intimidating the likes of Bubba Watson and Webb Simpson. Ian Poulter paired with Rory McIlroy. In no other universe would Ian Poulter be out there playing with Rory McIlroy, but for some reason, come Ryder Cup time, he turns it on, and especially on European soil, he loves it. But this was not an insurmountable task. You have the advantage of only needing the 14 points, that extra half point in either a halved match or, squeaking one out where you really shouldn't. That's not on you. If you already have the cup, you need a half point less in order to retain the cup. That advantage has gone out the water. As good a start as the U.S. had going up 3-1 in the morning matches on day one, it's all gone now. I mean, I hate to put too fine a point on it once again, but they haven't won since. I believe it's 8-3 now, Europe. So, to put it another way, Europe has won the last 7 straight matches that have gone final. The only one that has a chance of doing something here, as I said, are Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, who are out there against Ian Poulter and John Rahm. That's Bob Soucy's favorite golfer. They definitely have the advantage in this one. And Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas are good buddies. They played junior golf together. I find their swings to be nearly identical. They are, in many ways, the same breed of golfer, same temperament, same attitude. There's just enough frat boy cheering going on between the two of them that makes it borderline hard to root for. But right now, they are all we've got. That's it. If you are Team USA, you have hitched your wagon to Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. They're the only things out on the course right now that have a chance, and it's a good chance, but one up through 14, issue is still very much in doubt. I have no idea if they're going to be able to pull this one out. I think they are, but they're the only guys out there that can stop this streak for the Europeans right now. They've won 7 straight matches, up 8-3 now, as the morning matches start to wind down over in France. So what can I say? This is not what I wanted to talk about today. This is not the tone of the show I was hoping for on this final Sports Hub Golf Club of the season. But be that as it may, we'll monitor the Ryder Cup progress throughout the show today. And we've also got a few other things to talk about. Specifically, as I said, the 2016 Ryder Cup and the book that John Feinstein wrote about that called The First Major. I talked with John a couple of weeks ago. Replay just a portion of that interview for you coming up. And I also have to tell you about everything that happened out at Core Golf on Saturday. Talked about it briefly on the Zolak and Bertrand show. The video has been posted, and you'll be able to see that not only on 98.5thesportshub.com, but I posted it on my Twitter feed. I know Core Golf has kind of retweeted it and gotten it out there too. So you'll be able to see that online if you want to go to my Twitter, at Hardy985. But I will tell you how it all went down. The Hardy and Jermaine Wiggins Long Drive Challenge. It was years ago when we were all working together over in the old building at the Sports Hub, and Wiggy used to be on with Felger and Maz all the time, and he was, you know, just going off, just Wiggy being Wiggy. If he wasn't talking about how he could still dunk a basketball or you know, go play, with the Providence Bruins, he was talking about how he could beat me in golf, or at the very least beat me in a long drive contest. And we had it all set up and ready to go. We were going to do it over at Ponkapog is where I had it set up with my buddy Joe Leary, who was going to lay out the grid for us. We were going to do it there. The next day, Wiggy quit to get the morning show job over on 96.9. So we were not able to do a joint venture, joint promotional venture, or even the competition. And, you know, tell everybody about it because we're, you know, essentially competitors. But now that we're all back in the same radio family, Wiggy mentioned it, and I said, fine, I'll set it up. And Core Golf was the perfect place to do it. We did it last Saturday. If you didn't hear what happened, I will tell you what happened next.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back now in the Sports Hub Golf Club, as I mentioned, the Hardy Wiggy Long Drive Challenge took place last weekend. Jermaine Wiggins, former New England Patriot, now morning show host on 96.9, one of the 19 hosts they have there. Have you ever seen that studio? Tom, have you seen that studio in the morning? How many people are in there? I think they have 4 full-time people on the air, 2 producers, a stunt person, and several runners.
And then one person to get everyone coffee.
Yeah. And then someone else to play the 6 songs an hour that they play. That's the gig I want. So Wiggy obviously has lots of energy at the end of his workday and wanted to do a long drive challenge, which he wanted to do years ago. We didn't get a chance to get it done before, you know, he went to work over here when I was still at the Sports Hub. And now we're all in the same building. Fine. Wiggy wanted to do the long drive challenge again. I said, fine. The guys at Core Golf will accommodate us. We went over there last weekend, and there is about a 2-minute video that I posted online on Twitter at Hardy985. You can see it there, but the audio from it, I think, does a pretty good job of telling the story.
1, 2, 3, 4.
We're going to use a 2-minute window to hit as many drives as you can, and you got a 50-yard wide grid to hit into.
50-yard wide? I thought fairways are supposed to be like 150 yards wide.
150 yards wide. That's a wide fairway.
Yeah, well, that's the way I thought we were playing. I thought it was like hitting into the ocean, too, so I can talk backstory. Okay?
Wow, look at that.
Did I bite off more than I could chew? I highly doubt it. Blending the two.
Oh, okay.
Get a little
wow. I can't hit it any better than that. You know what?
I'm going to quit after two. How much time I got left on the clock?
A minute.
A minute? Okay. Go ahead.
Are you
sure? You can take my minute.
Okay.
You can have 3 minutes.
Okay.
You're
okay.
Not going to beat that.
When he's getting there.
Wow. Big.
That's game time, boys.
50 yards more and it'll be game time.
Oh. A little spinny.
My last ball here. What track was sweet? Ah. All right.
Uh-oh.
I don't know where it is.
251. 251. I tell you what, though, Wiggy. That's a hell of a drive, man.
Well.
Hell of a drive.
You won the longest drive.
That's all I wanted.
But at the end of the day, I'm the only one that has the ability to play at the PGA because of my, what was it?
Clubhead speed.
My clubhead speed was faster than Justin Thomas. So
who's Justin Thomas?
I don't know, but he must be somebody. Because they said it like, hey, faster than Justin Thomas. So I look and I say, is there any blood on that golf club? Because if there's not, that means it hasn't been used properly.
Oh, it's like keeping it real always, Wiggy. All right, so you couldn't obviously see the numbers if you watch the video again on Twitter at Hardy985 or on the station website. You'll see all the graphics and all the numbers. Basically, Wiggy showed up 15 minutes late. So I had a chance to warm up for probably 10 of those minutes. But then Wiggy had a lot of warm-up time, too, so that was fine. So when it came time to it, and we started the clock, I hit two drives. And the first one I hit 258, and the second one, as good a drive as I'm going to hit, you know, all year probably, 281.1. A lot of luck. Just caught the middle of the club face. Stayed easily on the grid. I said, that's it. I had a minute left on the clock. I said, fine, Wiggy, take my minute. You're not going to beat that. And his drives ranged anywhere from, you know, like a 198 to 231. And finally, on his final attempt, 251.8 yards. So I'll give him credit for not, you know, cracking under the pressure and hitting one good final drive when the clock was running out. But the interesting thing was, Wiggy did have clubhead speed that eclipsed 119 miles an hour. Now, my clubhead speed ranged anywhere during my warmups and on the two shots there. I think the one that went 281.1, I think my clubhead speed was like 104 and change. Wiggy is topping out at like PGA Tour level clubhead speed. It is a violent, violent swing. If he ever manages to make good contact with it, that he will back up what he has said, which he can hit at 330 yards. Because if you maximize 119 miles an hour of clubhead speed, that's how far the ball goes, 330, 335. It's just a matter of not catching it on a descending blow or spinning it so far off to the right that he was 100 yards off a 50-yard wide grid. So, more on that, though, with Dan Boisvert here, who is the director of instruction at Core Golf in Natick, who right after the contest, I talked with Dan. I said, you know what, forget about all this technique and you know, the way we really should be swinging the club. Let's just say you're going to do something like this, a long drive contest. I should have talked to him about this beforehand, but I didn't want to sway things. So after the competition was over, I talked with Dan about just how to hit the ball a long way, right? Because And I started off by saying there is value in just hitting it a long way. It's not all drive for show and putt for dough, because the numbers show you that just hitting the ball a long way, even if it means being in the rough, is actually good for your score.
Yeah, if you're closer to the hole, your proximity should get more narrow because you're hitting less club in. Less club means you can get a little bit more aggressive with your lines. So in terms of advancing the ball as far as you can, in most situations, it's a good thing to do. If you're playing on a really tight course, it's probably not the smartest solution. But hitting it far is a huge advantage, and you see it with Dustin Johnson, Rory, Tiger Woods. Like, these guys are able to hit it 30, 40 yards past their opponents. And, you know, for some people, after 18 holes of that, it's pretty intimidating.
All right, so let's just talk about
maybe three tips for really lengthening out our drives here. I assume that number one is being the right club, and we can talk more about that later if you want, but getting fit for the right driver is probably the first thing you should do if you're really looking to add distance.
Yeah, if you're serious and golf is something that you do often, it's always worth it to get the right shaft in your hand, the right head, the right lofts, the right gram weightings. All these things are extremely important to have. I'd say the most important thing is definitely the shaft. That's the motor of the club.
All right. So that's an equipment issue. Dan is going to give us the real swing tips here. So number one, just want to stretch it out with
position.
The driver off the tee. What's number one?
Ball position. Most people, they're hitting the ball high on the face because they're hitting down on the ball too much because the ball position's not in the right spot. If you think about the arc that the swing is on, it's in the backswing, it's working down. In the middle of the swing, it's level. And then in the front of the swing, it's working up. So if you can set the ball up off your lead heel, you're going to have a more likely chance of you swinging up and through the ball rather than down and across it.
So ball position, wherever you need it in your stance so that you're hitting, up on the ball, preferably not on the top face of the ball, or
exactly.
even with a little bit of a downswing,
exactly.
which is what we saw from Wiggy.
That's right. That's right. So typically attack angle, it varies on what your club head speed is, but for most people, most adult males, you want to be at least 2 to 3 degrees up on the driver to minimize spin, maximize launch angle, and to really optimize both your carry and your total distance.
Okay. Ball position is number one. What's number two?
Number two, I would say, is the depth of your shoulder turn. What most people do is when they're trying to hit the ball harder or further, they swing all arms and they don't rotate. But the golf swing is you create power in the golf swing by rotating your body. So for most people, if you're able to get your shoulders a little bit deeper in the backswing, you create more space and more time to start the downswing in an efficient pattern.
Now, does this equate also to a full body turn, or do you want to create a little torque by doing a full shoulder turn, but maybe leaving the hips a little bit behind so you can kind of create that, you know, that unwound spring type of effect?
It's very much person to person. What I'll say is it's hard to turn your shoulders more without your hips rotating. So if you can turn, there's very few situations that I've had someone that can turn too much. You know, Dustin Johnson's like Gumby. The guy can turn so much, but creating X factor, the separation between your hips and shoulders, the more you can create, the more speed you're going to be able to generate.
Okay. Hitting the ball a long way, driver off the tee, ball position is number one, shoulder turn, paying attention to getting as much turn as you can, not just making it all arms. What's number three?
Number three is going to be attack angle. So that's kind of a byproduct of number one and number two. Ball position will allow the club to start swinging on more of an ascending angle than a descending angle. Getting the shoulders to turn more is going to help you, for some people, help you shallow the club out so it will swing more inside to out. If the club swings more inside to out, it's going to want to swing up as well. Something quick and easy that you can do is just get some Dr. Scholl's spray.
Yeah.
Spray it on the face of the driver, hit some balls. What you'll see is if you're typically someone with a negative attack angle, the ball's striking pattern is going to be higher on the face. The higher you hit it on the face, the higher the ball goes. It spins more, it goes shorter. So trying to bring that point of impact closer to the middle of the face, you can put an empty box of golf balls about a foot in front and try to work on swinging up and over that, or just throw a head cover down, something to give you a visual to try to swing over the top of.
And anything to be particularly aware of in terms of avoiding, do people tend to widen their stance too much when they're trying to hit it hard? You already talked about swinging with the arms. Are there any other, danger signs that you should look for if you're trying to hit it farther?
Well, I would say you never want the driver to touch the ground. Whether you're backswing, if you're dragging the club head, or in the downswing, you're hitting an inch behind it, that driver head should never touch the ground.
And even on practice swings?
Even on practice swings. Your practice swing needs to be something that allows you to feel the right thing. So if you're taking practice swings and you're hitting the turf every time, you're not setting yourself up for
even success. Brushing the turf, that's
even
not what you want.
The turf, nope.
Because it takes away club head speed too, just incrementally, but bit by bit. If you're taking away club head speed, you're taking away distance.
100%.
All right. Dan Boisvert, Director of Instruction, Core Golf. Thanks for hosting the Hardy Wiggy Long Drive Challenge. And awesome. I know that Wiggy appreciates the lesson you gave him afterward, because in full disclosure, he did crush one 287 after a 10-minute lesson with you. So now you've created a monster. I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of him.
Good. We're looking forward to it.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Woo. As promised, here he is joining us on the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's John Feinstein, author of a couple of my favorite golf books of all time, A Good Walk Spoiled. John, it's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
My pleasure, Hardy. Good to talk to you. And in regard to the book we're talking about today, the first major, it was significant because one of the first events I went to in researching A Good Walk Spoiled was the 93 Ryder Cup at the Belfry, which, as you probably know, is the last time the U.S. won on foreign soil. And the minute I walked onto the grounds there, I knew that someday I wanted to go back and take a real hard look at the Ryder Cup, because the passion you feel, the intensity, the nerves that the players on both sides have is like nothing else in golf, because it's the only time, and I don't even count the President's Cup, that's like comparing a club championship to the Masters, where guys are playing, and it's not as much so much for their country, although that's part of it, but they're playing for 11 other guys. And for the captain and the vice captains. And that's unique in golf because it's an individual sport. But every 2 years for 1 week, it becomes a team sport. And the intensity is totally different than other weeks when guys are just playing for themselves. So I made a mental note to myself, you know, Ryder Cup book someday if you get the chance. And it only took me 23 years to get around to doing it. But I got very lucky that the year I did it was this remarkable event at Hazeltine when the U.S. finally won again, and there were all sorts of remarkable storylines, really, on both sides.
Yeah, and it's John Feinstein, by the way, author of the first major. It's all about the 2016 Ryder Cup. The book starts off talking about you being there in 93, and then kind of goes through the history of it, which a lot of this I didn't know, including the fact that it was one guy in particular who decided, you know what, the U.S. is just really beating the bag out of this English and Irish team, Ryder Cup after Ryder Cup. Let's open it up to all of Europe. And whose idea was that?
It was Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
And really, of all the amazing things Jack has done in golf, to me, that ranks right up there, because he took the Ryder Cup from being an event that almost no one paid attention to, because, as he said, the U.S. was pummeling Great Britain and Ireland every 2 years. Nobody really cared because there was no suspense in the event. Jack said that, you know, for him as a player, it had almost become hit and giggle golf because there wasn't any doubt that the U.S. was going to win. And he liked the idea of representing your country on both sides of the Atlantic. And Seve Ballesteros had shown up in 1976 by finishing second at the British Open at the age of 19. And Jack's thought was, there's probably more coming besides Seve from the continent. So why not open it up to Europe and make it more competitive? And as he said to me when I interviewed him for the book, he said, I had no idea what it was going to become, that it was going to become so intense and sometimes over the top, as we saw with the War by the Shore, as we saw at Brookline, and as we saw at times at Hazeltine. But it's become one of the great events in sports, and it would not have become that if not for Jack.
And you mentioned Jack a couple of times in the early portions of the book, and some of the stuff I knew about, the concession. But, you know, there's the great story about him telling his playing partner to pick up his putt, even though he was inside of where Jack's was. He's like, pick that up, I'll make it. Or him telling the captain, give me Tom Weisskopf. I know he hasn't been playing well, but I'll straighten his ass out. And
I'll
he did.
I'll take care of it.
I know. It's stuff that only you would only believe it with Jack Nicklaus and maybe another guy who's going to factor into this next Ryder Cup, Tiger Woods. But Tiger is a part of this 2016 Ryder Cup that you write about as a captain. And really, this is the one, as you said, the one where they kind of, you know, figured it out once again. How important was it to the U.S., this particular 2016 Ryder Cup, in terms of their overall standing, if you want to do like a lifetime count in terms of their Ryder Cup success?
What was the old saying? I can't remember which general said it to his men the night before a battle. Defeat is not an option. That was pretty much where the U.S. Ryder Cup team was in 2016. They had lost 8 out of 10 Ryder Cups, 7 out of 8. They'd had the meltdown at Medina when they were up 10 to 6 and ended up losing on home ground. Europe had embarrassed them in 2014. Phil Mickelson and Tom Watson had had their mutual takedown after the matches were over, and they formed this Ryder Cup task force to figure things out. And I'll say this. I mean, I made fun of the task force like everybody else did. Nicholas had the best line. He said, if the task force helps us make more birdies, then it's a good thing. But what the task force did was it allowed the U.S. to go away from the tradition that you only captain one time. And they gave Davis Love the job again, because Davis did a good job at Medina in 2012. He, the captain is so responsible for the pairings the first 2 days. The singles is more of a lottery, but he got him a 10-6 lead, and then they couldn't hold it. So to me, that was a brilliant move, making Davis the captain. And when Davis figured out that they were going to ask him, he called the other players who were on that Ryder Cup task force. It was Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler, Jim Furyk, Steve Stricker. And he said, if I do this, I need each of you to say to me, you will do anything I ask you to do to help us win. And all five of them agreed. And as you know, Tiger Woods had been a very reluctant Ryder Cup player. He didn't really want to play. He had to because of publicity. It wasn't a major championship, which was always his goal. He wasn't friendly with the other guys on the team because his father told him not to be. And he committed full bore to being a vice captain, to the point where the guys before the matches began were joking about how Tiger kept calling him all the time saying, what about this? How about playing with that guy? And Brant Snedeker said one day Tiger was on the phone just going on and on and on. And he finally said to him, Tiger, I got to go. You need a hobby. And that's not the Tiger Woods we've all known for so many years.
John Feinstein, author of The First Major. It's about the 2016 Ryder Cup. Thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it, John.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back to wrap things up on this final episode of the season of the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy, and we've got one more 19th hole to bring you. It's presented by Deep Eddy Vodka. Authentic American vodka made in the heart of Texas. Deep Eddy Distilling Company, Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Please day drink responsibly. Last year, around this time, I went up to the clubhouse, golf and entertainment there in Middleton, Mass., where they've got simulators, they've got pool, they've got ping pong, they've got just this whole like array of things to do, plus a really great indoor teaching studio and a bar. So I'm going to make that the 19th hole as we kind of slide into the off season for golf. You're going to have to check out some places maybe to do some indoor stuff, but not for a while. Not ready to write off the season just yet. Plenty of good weather out there. Fall golf is still some of the best time to get out on the golf course. But if you're looking for indoor spots, you can do a lot worse than the clubhouse there in Middleton. So that is your 19th hole for this week. Ryder Cup going on right now, as we just heard from John Feinstein. That's a book you can check out if you like reading about a Ryder Cup where the U.S. won. You might have to go back to 2016 because things are not looking good at the Ryder Cup this morning in France, where they are finishing off the morning matches. Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth teamed up once again. Look like they're going to salvage the only point in the last 8 matches to go off. A shot of Phil Mickelson kneeling down on the side of the green with Captain Jim Furyk. Mickelson looks like he's going to sit the entire day. He did not have it going at the end of the Tour Championship, where I believe he finished dead last. He made the field, but his game is not in the right spot right now. It certainly wasn't in day one. And now we see Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. And again, this one isn't over yet. They're one up right now on 17. But it looks like Justin Thomas needs to make this putt in order for them to win the match and salvage the only point in the last 8 matches to go off. U.S. jumped out to a 3-1 lead. the first matches of the Ryder Cup, and then lost all four in part two of day one. So now, as Justin Thomas holds his putt, he and Jordan Spieth win their match 2-1, up two with one hole to play, over Jon Rahm and Ian Poulter, giving the U.S. their only point of these morning matches, going back to day one of the morning matches when they went up 3-1. That means your count is now 8-4 in favor of Europe. A 3-1 lead for the U.S. evaporates. They manage only 1 point in the next eight matches. 8-4, Europe leads heading into the afternoon matches here of day two. What does it all mean? Well, in order for the U.S. to retain the cup, they need to get a total of 14 points. So there are 10 more points they need to win in the four matches here going off this afternoon and eight more tomorrow. Europe needs 6.5 points, which you can divvy that up any way you want. The easiest way would they need to win six matches out of the next 14, and they need to have one of those matches to get a half a point. You need 14.5 to take the cup back if you were already in possession of the cup, as the U.S. is after 2016. You need just 14 points. It's going to be an uphill battle. These guys are just not playing well enough. Now, a lot of people, detractors, say, of Tiger Woods, want to point to the fact that Tiger isn't playing well, and I can hear it already. Oh, I guess he's not back after all. Oh, I guess Tiger has never been a great match play player. And Feinstein talked about it a few minutes ago. He was not wired that way from an early age. You know, his father, for everything that he did and taught him and instilled in his son, good and bad, one of the things that he did was he said, these guys aren't your friends. You're not out there to make buddies. You're not out there for camaraderie or, you know, just a nice profession where you have colleagues. No, you're out there to annihilate the competition week in and week out. So for Tiger, I think it's always been a struggle to adopt this whole team mentality. Now, Feinstein talked about it a few minutes ago when he said that Tiger fully adopted this, you know, this notion of being a co-captain and then, you know, rooting on guys and trying to think of it in terms of a way of, in terms of, you know, trying to get a win. But it is still a sport that is almost always a singular pursuit being played in a team atmosphere. And that just never suited Tiger's game. So it's not like he's fallen off from his great match play success in the past. He's never been that good at match play. I'm not surprised that I am surprised because Tiger was hitting the ball better and he was putting better. Certainly, you know, going back to the tournaments earlier this year, his runner-up at the Valspar, and then when he held the lead on the back nine for a brief time at the British, his runner-up at the PGA, and of course his win at the Tour Championship. He's playing well enough to where I thought he'd be more of a factor in this thing, but not so far. In terms of the other guys out there, everybody's getting beat. Aside from the first series of matches where the U.S. went up 3-1, everybody is out there getting beat. Nobody deserves to be singled out more than another. Maybe Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau, who truly got waxed yesterday. That was ugly. But Brooks Koepka and Tony Finau, they were beat by Garcia and McIlroy this morning. Tyrell Hatton, where Ryan Johnston is in the studio now. Were you and I together when I called him Tyrell?
Yes.
At the Dell Technologies?
I may yell at you.
Yeah. It's Tyrell.
Yes.
It's like kids
actually,
in the hall.
Is it Tyrell? Is it Terrell?
Tyrell. I said Tyrell, and I believe he said Tyrell. Not Tyrell. I don't care. Stop it. He and Paul Casey beat Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler this morning. As I mentioned, Tiger lost again. He and Patrick Reed, you know, this fierce Ryder Cup competitor. Nope. They got waxed 4-3 by your British Open champion from this year, Francesco Molinari and Tommy Fleetwood. The only win to come in the last eight matches just happened. Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth over Ian Poulter and Jon Rahm. And that was by a very narrow margin. 2-1. So that's where it stands right now. I don't feel great about the U.S. chances.
No,
I do not. I think it's whatever plans you had for the weekend. This is why I said during the U.S. Open. So maybe I'll do the reverse jinx again. When Dustin Johnson had the lead after 36 holes, he's like up four strokes on the next. I said, DJ is going to win the U.S. Open. Don't worry about it. And, of course, there's all this egg on my face when Brooks Koepka ended up being the back-to-back U.S. Open champion. But this one feels a little bit more in the bag than DJ at the U.S. Open.
Well, I mean, if the United States doesn't win at least three out of four in the afternoons, it's you're into, like, Brookline territory, right? You're
right
four down or, you know, maybe even bigger than that going into Sunday. So,
but I'll still watch, and people will still watch, based on what Europe did a few years ago.
I'm going to watch just because it's on in the morning, and it's going to be it's going to lead up to football. It'll be perfect morning. You know, if this was happening in the United States and they were playing on a Sunday afternoon,
forget it.
Then nobody's watching.
No.
I mean, if it's on, these guys are teeing off at 8, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'll be there.
And by the way, just to what the PGA Tour has already decided to do, thank goodness, because the only reason why people got a chance to see Tiger win last weekend is because his win happened to come at a time where the 1 o'clock games were done and the 4 o'clock games were kind of in the early stages, and enough people could switch off to watch Tiger win the tour championship. Otherwise, had it gone off at a slightly different time, nobody would have seen it.
See, and I didn't even turn over just because it wasn't close. If it was close, I probably would have checked it out. But you know, when I checked the leaderboard and he was up by like three shots, like, yeah, I'm good.
All right.
I mean, I've seen Tiger win a tournament before.
Yeah, it's just the PGA Tour is doing the right thing by moving the whole schedule so they're not competing with football anymore, which begins next year. And that's when the next Sports Hub Golf Club will begin. Let's call it Masters Weekend.
By the way, next year. If you haven't watched any of the Ryder Cup yet, this is what a great course setup for this.
Yeah.
The 15, 16, and 18 greens are all pretty much right next to each other. They have one giant grandstand. It's awesome. If this thing does come down to it tomorrow, if United States can somehow make this into a tournament, that'll be some great theater.
Yeah, and I have no idea where this course is in the country of France. The only golf courses I know are U.S., some in, and when I say no, I haven't played any of the courses in England, Scotland, Ireland, but you still know of those courses and like a couple here and there that I've just heard of, you know, in Cape Kidnappers in New Zealand, because I got a buddy who played there. You know, you hear of a course here that I don't know anything about golf courses outside of, you know, the courses where the British Open are played and the U.S. But this course in France looks awesome. And like you said, the venue is terrific.
Water
for this.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, and guys they needed scuba gear out there yesterday. Like the guys from both sides just dunking balls in and not even close.
Well, that's why it's kind of fun watching match play, is because these guys, you know, at times the riskier shot or the riskiest shot is the smartest one. When a guy, when you're playing in the four ball or the, when everybody's playing their own ball,
right,
as opposed to the alternate shot format. Okay. If your guy's on the green, I'm going to go for it here. And whether it's a long shot over water, or you're going to go pin seeking on a hole that's protected by water on the bad side. So what? You know, your total number of strokes for the day doesn't matter. Only what you do on this hole right now. So it's fun to watch in that regard, but not fun when the U.S. is down 8-4 in today's afternoon matches. All right, Ryan Johnston, you're solo for a while until the start of the hockey
solo
show?
Solo until 9.
Very
we'll
good.
Talk some Patriots until then and get into hockey with the guys coming up from 9 to 11.
Sounds good. Tim McCone, thank you very much. Tom Morgan, thank you for producing this morning. Thanks to everybody who was part of the Sports Hub Golf Club this season, including Core Golf, who hosted the Hardy Wiggy Long Drive Challenge last weekend. Thank you, Jermaine, for participating in that. We'll do it again starting next spring. Like I said, most likely Masters weekend. We'll be back for another season of the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.